Greetings! Welcome to today's special podcast episode in collaboration and a co-production with the Creative Seed Podcast and the Slow Dive. Today we have a very, very special, intrepid guest, writer-director Yelena Krivosheyeva with us today. And we're going to dive into film, filmmaking, impact, interconnectedness, all that good stuff today. So I'm excited to get into this conversation with Yelena. And let's go. Welcome, Yelena. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Farida. How are you? Thank you for having me. This is exciting. This is my first podcast.
Oh, great. Oh, this will be a great experience. So thank you for joining Sam and I in our little studio today. Yelena, I'm going to ask you a really just a starter question. Give me four words you would use to describe yourself.
Okay. Should have prepared for that one. Four words. Okay. Passionate, compassionate, creative, and a little weird.
Oh, okay. So a little weird. That's five words, but we'll just say weird. Weird. Okay, cool. That's good. All right. Passionate, compassionate, creative, and weird. Awesome. Great. All right. Well, just to kind of start this interview off, since we're in the film world today with Sam and myself, well, let's talk about your origin story, Yelena. I know, of course, you're a writer-director, but tell me a little bit how you started out in life.
I was born and raised in Russia, in Central Park, not far from Moscow. Very small town, very similar to Chernobyl. Back in those days, there were a lot of towns like that were built around nuclear power plants. So if you look at the pictures of Chernobyl, that's exactly how my hometown looked like. So my journey with filmmaking didn't start with me getting a camera at 7 years old. I took a long way around the barn to find filmmaking. Growing up in Russia, I wanted to be a journalist since I was very young, and I was very fortunate. By some crazy luck, I was selected to become a TV host for a local cable network. So I started to lead this, it was a 1 hour program that would stream every Friday for about an hour. And it just had to do with anything that the kids were interested in. Local events around town, anything that had to do with, music, some pop culture trends, things like that. So I would come up with all the material. I would, go and film it, interview people, edit it with an editor. So it was an incredible, incredible experience for me. So by the time I graduated high school, I had a huge resume. Already working on television and writing articles for a local newspaper as well. So I was just super passionate journalist. I thought that journalism was a way to change things, to change people's lives, to tell them stories that they had no idea about. And I thought journalism was storytelling, as silly as it might sound. But for the longest time, I was confusing journalism with storytelling. And then I went to study journalism at one of the best universities in the country. And I started to work as a freelance reporter for a pretty big newspaper as well. And again, being such an idealistic young person, I was so driven to tell stories that matter. But my male superiors would just push me to cover theater and boxing of all things, because they thought that was a good idea to send a little girl in a short skirt to a boxing match, thinking that I would get interviews. But instead of that, obviously, nobody took me seriously and I would get the hell harassed out of me. At the time, in a city where I was going to school, we had this crazy nationalistic movements forming called skinheads. Skinheads originated as soccer fans in Europe, and they're just this group of very violent young men who would crash cars after the soccer matches. But it somehow spread throughout Russia's nationalistic movements. And these kids would, target anyone on the street that did not look like them and would basically be very violent, beat them to death. And on my campus at the Faculty of Journalism, we had a very big population of students from Northern Africa who would come to the country to study journalism. So they would get harassed and beaten. And there were cases of two actual murders. And I was writing articles about it, and I was not getting anywhere with it. And at some point, I was sat down by, again, my male superiors, and they said, why don't you stick to what you should stick to, which is write theater and this, and nobody cares about what do you want to say. And around the same time, Putin came to power and started shutting down all the independent media channels. And I, at the age of, 18, 19, I realized that I would never have a future, in that country, believing what I believed in and the type of journalism I wanted to do. So that led to my decision to come to America. Like I said, at the age of 19, without really speaking much language, with $300 in my pocket and a couple Dostoevsky's books that I still have. And now that led me to come here. And it was, now I'm going to speed it up because it was, again, a long journey. I went to school here. I went to school in Boston, had a few strange experiences when one of my professors at Suffolk University told me that I would never have a future in broadcast journalism in America because of my accent. I think that was the only time I allowed someone to kind of kill my dream, and I realized, well, I guess he makes sense.
So you came to America at 19, but you started off in the journalism media room at what age? Tell the audience. 12. So what was it like? Like, walk us through, what is a 12-year-old in Russia reporter? Like, that's pretty badass, Yelena. I don't know. What was that like? Tell our audience a little bit of that experience. Because then, did you do that for 7 years? Consistently? That's pretty...
More or less. There have been some setbacks there because the country was going through a lot of changes economically, obviously. It was the 90s. It was a really messy time in Russia at the time. So at times they would shut down the funding, so there would not be, anything going on. But yes, on and off. And definitely with them consistently writing articles for working for newspaper as well.
So once again, storytellers and journalists, you were 12 when you started. Can you give us any experiences in that time period from that period when you were working in journalism and media that stood out to you that you'd like to share that kind of shaped you or they're remarkable that kind of still either, affect you even now, years later, or something that shaped your journey?
So first of all, I guess to clarify, why did that even happen for me to end up there? And I guess not just being a kid who was sitting in front of the camera, but also someone who was coming up with material and all that, which sounds a bit ridiculous, right? It was only because the network was required to have some sort of a program for the young kids, but nobody wanted to do it. So they just wanted to get a passionate kid. And I was a head of a journalism club at my school and an A student and very well spoken in Russian. I know that I don't sound much in English. But so it was just really somebody's laziness and lack of, that just gave me this incredible learning opportunity. And I think the best thing about it was that I really found a gift interviewing people and connecting with people that I really cherish to this day. And I also realized that when I said I'm passionate and compassionate, what I meant by that is I feel too much for the people that I tell stories about. I feel like maybe I wouldn't be able to be a journalist my whole life because I just care too much and relate too much. And it's like a sponge soaking all that. I'm not able to disassociate from the pain and suffering that people have. So I guess when I at some point realized that journalism was not for me for a few reasons while I was already here in America, I was like, well, maybe I was not the best person for it. It's just because journalism is not, as I said, storytelling that I thought it is. And I feel like filmmaking is a way better channel that does not include politics like journalism does. And it's a way better channel to try to change things and impact others. So I'm glad that I've had that realization and it eventually led me to filmmaking.
Okay, so $300 and you come to America at age 19. First impression of America at 19, coming from Russia.
Well, I had two different ones. I first came to Virginia and worked as a lifeguard there and could barely speak English and didn't quite enjoy my experience. I just came here for the summer and couldn't really, didn't really understand the culture, didn't really, and it was more conservative, I guess, community. And I was not really, everybody was just like kind of looking at me as like such an outsider. But what was interesting is that the following summer, I came back and I went to Massachusetts. And I went to, out of all the places, I went to Provincetown on Cape Cod, which is the gay capital of America. Mm-hmm. And for the girl who grew up in such a conservative, misogynistic culture, seeing, you know, women growing beards and kissing each other and men walking around on the street holding hands, I was blown away. I'm like, this is freedom. A freedom, to me, American freedom is all about freedom of expression. You could be anyone who you want to be in this country. And we're so lucky that we have that. There's so many places in the world where you cannot. And it's not just about your sexual orientation, but it's about, you know, your dreams, you know, like who you want to be, how you want to behave, how you want to dress. I mean, so many little things. And we're just so blessed that we live in a country where we can do that. We can be whoever we want to be. And that's when I was just watching all this on the street. And I'm like, oh my God. It was absolutely fascinating. And, you know, in Provincetown is not just this party town. I mean, it's been a place that's been attracting artists and writers since, you know, for many, many years. There is something about that town that is just, you know, it's the farthest point of the United States. There's just something magical about it. So I got the best experience living there. And I'm so glad that life led me there.
Wow. Okay. So we're in California now. How was that like moving from the East Coast and now finding yourself here? What brought you here? Was it Hollywood? Was it filmmaking?
Yes. Well, I knew that after doing my undergrad in Boston, I've worked in corporate America for a bit and really did not enjoy it. I mean, I was restless. I was not doing creative things. So that's when I knew that I needed to change something. And so I started taking classes all over Boston. So I took some screenwriting classes at the Harvard Extension School, and that really changed my life. When I wrote my first screenplay, I was like, this is it. Platform and like not platform but the channel that I've been looking for my whole life. So I knew I wanted to go to graduate school, but I didn't have any experience in film. So I needed to, you know, in order to get accepted, you need to show them something. So I got an intermediate degree in film production from Emerson, which is a great school in Boston. And then I started applying for graduate schools, and I was looking at places in New York, but I knew I needed to go west because Los Angeles is where the industry is. And that's what led me to come to Chapman University in 2015, where I got my master's in directing.
Wow. Amazing school. And now you're here. So shifting gears a little bit. So what are you currently right now, aside from being a writer director in the industry? What are you working on? Tell our audience a little bit about some of the work you're doing.
Well, since I graduated from film school, I was working as an assistant for Martha Coolidge, who is one of the pioneer female directors known for The Valley Girl and Real Genius. And actually, her documentary, one of her first documentaries called Not a Pretty Picture, which was a documentary about her own rape that was filmed in 1975, has just been restored by the Lucas Foundation and is now getting a wider release, because it was shown at one of the first Sundance film festivals before it was Sundance, before it was just a Utah something, whatever it was called. But, you know, it had huge success, and that's what launched her career, essentially. But it was only shown at that festival and has not been distributed in any way. So I'm just very happy that it is all happening now. And if we're talking about just impact and things like that, I wanted to mention that, to just be on the lookout. We had a screening at MoMA in New York last summer. That was fantastic. And it's coming out on DVD in the Criterion channel. So I worked for Martha for a few years, and she's been my mentor and still is to this day. And then I've also worked as a freelance first assistant director, second assistant director, and a producer. I've also recently started a production company with my dear friends. It's called Nightfall Entertainment. And we do have studios in right outside of Augusta, Georgia. And actually, my latest film, Magic Ticket, which we're going to talk about later, was produced and it was filmed at our studio in St. Georgia. So yes, it's what I'm working on is freelancing. Obviously, with strike and everything, things been a bit difficult, but I'm working on bringing projects through for our production company. I've now directed 8 short films, and I want to graduate from that, and I want to work on my first feature, which I do have a few scripts that I've written, but I'm just trying to figure out what would be the best at this time.
Yeah, we're totally going to dive into that because I want to know what kind of films you want to direct, Yelena. But talking about the different roles, you said you're first AD, second AD, you work between California and Georgia, you're a producer, you have a business. It's safe to say you're also multi-hyphenate in the industry like everybody else. Do you see yourself as a producer foremost or a director foremost?
Well, I definitely see myself as a writer-director. Primarily, that's where the passion is. But a couple years ago, I produced my first feature. And even prior to that, all my shorts, I definitely played a big role in producing them. And I enjoy that. I really realized that I enjoy producing because I love putting together things and solving these logistical and creative puzzles and also helping others bring their vision to life. Like it really is. Brings me joy. So I produced a feature and a bunch of shorts in the last couple of years, and it's been a great experience. But the main focus is, of course, directing my own stuff because I feel like after many years, like I said, I took the long walk around the barn. Am I butchering that sentence? But
no.
You got me. But now I really feel like I found my voice because all my projects, I kind of have the same thing about them. They're always deeply personal. They all always start with something that I've experienced. And then I take something else and kind of work with it. So it's not just about me or my personal experience. And then social impact is a huge thing for me. Like I said, it all comes from that background in journalism because I just really want to change things in my own little way. And I've also found that I'm just really big on magical realism and psychological horror. I just love a very creative ways to tell stories. And everything that I've written or done has that element to it in various ways. Some like are real horror, some are just like very subtle. But I think that is my voice. And I'm so happy that I found it because, to be honest, while I was in film school, I didn't know I had it or I couldn't figure out what was it. And now I do know exactly what it is. And I think it's important. And so, yes.
So, Yelena, after all these short films that you've directed and all the projects you have worked on, and you're a writer-director who wants to do more features, is there a commonality that you see in the films that resonates with you? Is there like a personal ethos that you bring to your films? Is there like a philosophy emerging as you're in this creative process? How do you connect with your work? How do you come up with concepts and ideas? What speaks to you as a creator, a writer, director?
It is absolutely a commonality. And now when I look back at all my films, they were all my therapy because they were all based on personal experience, traumatic experience. I even directed one comedy that you would think would not be a traumatic experience, but it did deal with the misogyny and that I've experienced a lot, especially living in old Mother Russia. So it definitely starts with a very deeply personal experience that I feel and know and want to share and want to process in a way creatively. And then I try to find the best way to tell that story. And all my films always center around female characters. At first, it wasn't really a conscious choice, but then I realized that I just really, again, it's my, if they're my personal films, right? And if it's my traumatic experiences that I'm trying to speak about, there have to be females who are experiencing that. And I also think there are just so many unique and intricate things about how we females experience in life and emotions. And I love that. And I love showing that on the screen. And just to give you an example, because I feel like I'm speaking from such a general point of view, one of my films called Before the Thunder was about a female MMA fighter. And I'm a big fan of combat sports, big fan of combat movies, boxing, anything Rocky I love. But they're all usually male written, directed films. And it's, if you look at it, it's always the same type of story. Okay, a man loses a fight and then everything is over, right? But then he trains really hard and then he wins. So I wanted to write a combat movie about a female character that does not follow that formula. So it's a film about a female who is going through this career that is destroying her. She's getting too many concussions. She's losing. She's getting older. And so my story was that she eventually ends up walking away from her career, maybe a bit prematurely, but maybe not. And in my opinion, it was a win. And it was a way to look at it as a female. But maybe, you know, in a traditional point of view, whether traditional storytelling or traditional male storytelling, because what are we calling traditional storytelling? You know, it would be, oh, she gives up. But so this is kind of a very subtle ways, I think, that we can tell our stories as females, something like this, that we take, maybe established genre of, right, of a boxing combat movie, but telling it from a female perspective. And that's what I'm really passionate about. And that's what I constantly try to improve on and communicate in every one of my films.
I love that. Here's a quick question, briefly, if you can talk about this. What do you feel like the statistics about women not directing enough in Hollywood? And how do you think women should only direct women lived in experiences, or should men direct women's stories, or do we just need more women's stories? Like, give me, everyone here in this town has an opinion on how they feel about that and the equity of women directors, and then stories about women written by women for women, and then making them also available to all audiences. So what are, just to share your opinion, if you'd like, on that, because there's so many.
I know. Well, it's a hard one for me. First of all, I don't believe there is such thing as somebody needs to direct things for this audience because they are necessarily like representing that group. With all the respect, I believe that, you know, there are stories. As long as you're respectful, as long as you're given your role, you don't have to be someone. I don't have to be an MMA fighter to tell an MMA story, as long as I'm respectful to the to it and do my diligence and do all that. So when it comes to women, I guess that's the main question. Well, this whole monologue that I just gave you, that, oh, you know, I'm interested in female stories told from unique female perspectives, but that's just who I am, you know? And I don't believe that. There have been plenty of female stories told really well by males. And so that's why I don't think that. And when it comes to not enough female directors, well, I mean, there is still a degree of that's misogyny that we're dealing with. I mean, with all the changes and movements, there is still that. And I experienced that on set to this day, you know, it's something that's unspoken, but a lot of men, even today, don't want to take orders from a female, don't like, you know, and we as women, we walk a very fine line. There was one time I took, in my undergraduate, I took a political communication class, and I'll never forget what we were discussing, because that applies to it today, that this is like 15 years later. It's really hard to be a female politician also, right? And I feel like as a director, we kind of walk on the same path. So if you act like a man, right? If you act like any of them, you are going to be perceived as a B word, okay? Because we are in that box, so we have to be nice and smiley and pretty and nurturing and all that. But if you act that and too soft, then you're not, you know what I mean? You don't deserve it.
You don't get your professional respect. Right. Yeah.
So you have to walk that fine line, which was very well communicated in the film Barbie, right? When America Ferrera delivers that monologue, you have to be this in this and that and that. And at the same time, and this and that. And that's what we're dealing with still. And it's not going to go away quick. I mean, I'm so grateful to be part of this generation, and comparing to what my mentor Martha Coolidge used to deal with as a female, one of the first female directors who had a tremendous career. And we're still dealing with this. So yes, it's a very fine line, because it doesn't have to do with times are changing and society standards are changing, but there are still these things, the gender dynamics that been in place for so long, they're not going to shift overnight. And, but like I said, I'm so happy to be part of generation that have been cleared out by trailblazers like Martha Coolidge and Mary Lambert. And, you know, did I answer the question?
No, that's great. Well, we have to talk about your latest project that you wrote and direct called The Magic Ticket. Mm-hmm. I had a screening at the Pan-African Film Festival. Tell us about The Magic Ticket. And yeah, tell us about Magic Ticket.
Okay, well, first of all, let me give a shout out to a wonderful Samantha Henderson and Farida Rafiq, who are both producers on the film and would not be possible without you. Yes, this is my latest short film that it's just had its premiere at Academy Qualifying Pan-African Film Festival. It was a magical night. It was just so amazing to see it on a big screen because I, you know, produced this film independently with really any support of production company, aside from my friends. Again, we formed our company a bit later, but no, it was just a passion project that I wanted to do for a long time. I felt like I needed to get another short film out of my system before I moved to features. And this film centers around a homeless female veteran who finds herself on a street on Christmas Eve, and a kind stranger donates her a gift card to go into this fancy restaurant and have a meal. And when she goes in, of course, there's all kinds of pushback. People are uncomfortable, and eventually somebody calls the police, and the police comes, and they try to escort her out. And being manhandled by a male in uniform triggers her trauma, and that's when we learn that she was actually assaulted while she was in the military, and that was possibly the reason that led her to be on the street. So the film has a big message about military sexual trauma, MST, that I, while making the film and doing research and working with my amazing producing team here, so I've came across this crazy statistics that, of course, keeps changing. But when I first came across it, because the project started about 3 years ago, you know, I read there was 1 in 4 women in the military who are sexually assaulted. And we as civilians just don't talk about it enough. And so from then on, I was just obsessed by looking this up, reading the real life stories, what makes people end up on the street. And I was still living in Los Angeles and in a homeless crisis growing out of control, especially after COVID. I always would look at women, especially driving through like Skid Row, and even Santa Monica is now a big homeless hub. And I would always look at women and I would think what it's like for women out there. And that's why it's one of the lines of the dialogue in my film. Somebody asks this homeless person what it's like for women out there, because, you know, you're living on the other edge of society. You're not protected by anybody, you know? And what is it like for you? So that was really what I was questioning. But at the end of the day, when I was sharing with you that all my films are deeply personal and start with my own trauma, I've never served in the military, and I'm not a person of color, and I don't know what that's like, and I'm by any way ever tried to disrespect that. But I mean, I've had my own discriminations by being an immigrant, speaking with an accent and being an outsider, but I by no way claim that I would ever know or understand what people go through. But there is a deep personal connection that really started this film is because I was myself sexually assaulted a few years ago, and I never reported my rape because I could not fathom of just how could I go to another group of males and explain to them what happened to me, you know?
I want to say, first of all, Yelena, thank you for sharing that with our audience. I think one of the important things, I think your whole team, and we got everyone who has supported your film and your impact goals and all of that, is because there is so much stigma with mental health trauma and homelessness. And then you get to the trauma behind the trauma and then the re-traumatization of being traumatized. Like your film, not to use this analogy, is like a Russian nesting doll. I mean, it is. It's like a story within a story within a story.
I love that. Russian nesting doll. I love that.
one of the things like your story team and you did really well, I think, is incorporating three really important subjects that women and women of color are the most affected by, which is income inequality, poverty, economic instability, mental health, lack of resources, and lack of support. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a very important film, but I really do appreciate you sharing your personal connection. And I obviously do not want to comfortable to share what you want to share, but how has that been though, channeling your own Me Too experience and then seeing and writing a story about military sexual trauma and then seeing and then directing your lead actress and then bringing that to the screen? How has that, if you like, healed you or helped you or informed you as a filmmaker, as a woman? I know no one ever really gets over a lot of stuff overnight, but like, how has that journey been for you?
Well, as I mentioned before, I look at all my films as therapy because it is relieving things in a way. And it's very important to me to really be true on in my script, and especially when I work with my cast. And I'm very protective over my cast. And when I put them in these situations, in this extreme, because we do have a scene, a rape scene in The Magic Ticket. And I was very, very conscious of how it might have been for my lead actress. And I tried to be as open and honest with her. And I maybe told her a bit too much about my experience, but I wanted her to know that I'm there with her. You know, that this is my experience, and this is what I want her to understand and know. I wanted to be as vulnerable with her as she was with me. And the thing with The Magic Ticket is that, as I mentioned, I've been sexually assaulted and I've never reported my rape. And I felt very guilty about it for years because the biggest guilt was about what if he had done it to someone else and I could have possibly stopped it. So that's when the whole, I guess, idea started of me trying to speak and channel this silence that I've had, that I've kept for so long, and speak through the film. And everything else really just came together. Just started looking at things, noticing things. And then when the whole thing with the military statistics and research came about, I just could not believe it. And again, as a society, we're still, yes, Me Too was great, is great. And we're talking about it more and more, but there is still so much stigma associated with sexual assault. And that's why women don't speak up, because they don't want to defend themselves and explain what circumstances that happened, what were you wearing, and things like that. And what was interesting, while we were shooting the scene of the rape from The Magic Ticket, one of my male collaborators, who, you know, he meant well, he didn't mean it in any disrespectful way, but he said, because originally I wanted that scene to happen with no dialogue, but the way the location worked out and our camera movement, it would be a bit too awkward. So I had to write the dialogue basically on set, like 2 days before, which was never planned. And he said to me, well, you know, she's probably going to flirt with him because that's why he would do it. And I said, that's it. That's exactly why I'm making this film, is because that's not what this is. It's not about her flirting. It's not about her being intoxicated. It's not about what she's wearing. It's about the fact that this should not happen. And that was just my experience. That was not, him saying that wasn't hurtful. Him saying that wasn't something that brought me back. And him saying that reassured me that I need to make the story, because we need more conversation about this. We need to talk about this, because the more we talk about this, more women will speak up.
Yes. And once again, like, I think, unfortunately, I mean, they're statistically that is happening. And I think a lot of women can relate to your experience and feel some kind of understanding that comes with the filmmaking, and these stories are underreported. So yeah, you picked some, I mean, from an impact perspective, Yelena, you picked some really important subject matters. And so what do you hope the audience gains from this film going forward, aside from the dialogue and military sexual trauma and giving women a voice and not to be victimized, re-victimized by not feeling safe to share or report? What else do you hope to gain with the magic ticket going forward?
Well, I guess it goes back to what I was sharing with you at the very beginning of our interview, is that as a young journalist, I always hope that I could tell the story that can tell people something they didn't know about, right? And maybe change their mind. And that is still, you know, so many years later, I'm still that young, naive journalist, you know, somewhere that little girl still lives in me and wants to tell the story that I hope can just make people look at the situation in, you know, with different eyes and less judgment. Because there is so much judgment when it comes to homeless people, and it's still judgment when it comes to women who are sexually assaulted. Exactly what I was talking about, like, oh, what were the circumstances, right? Were you this, were you that? And it doesn't matter. And I just hope that, I think what we're missing is the kindness in this world. We just, things became so polar and so judgmental and so you are this or that, so political. I just hope that we can just look at each other with more kindness. And that's why the story of the magic ticket, it's set up at Christmas. And it's not just an idea out of nowhere. It's because Christmas should bring us together. It's been bringing us together for hundreds of years, right? That's why the story is set also in a restaurant, because a dining room table is something that people gather around for hundreds and hundreds of years. Can we just come together, you know, about something and forget these differences and judgments and stigmas and just be kinder to each other so this world can be a better place?
Well, thank you, Yelena. What is your hope for the future? Outside of film, what do you think the world needs more of?
Love.
Love.
This world needs more love. Love. Love and compassion for each other, for humans. We do live in, you know, during hard times, and world has been changing, and with the pandemic, and then all these things are just happening, and people are just more isolated, more in their phones, more in their heads, more in their, and we need to connect, we need to love each other more, we need to try to understand each other more, understand our differences. And another thing, I mean, I came to this country because I just love how diverse it is, how acceptive it is of different people. And it just pains me deeply of what's happening right now with it. Because, I mean, I know I don't sound like an American, but I feel like an American. I love this country so deeply. And I just hope we can come together with more love and compassion and overcome our differences. And like I said, maybe it's that naive, you know, naive girl in me that came from Russia thinks that way, but I just hope more love and kindness.
I love that. No, that's nothing naive about that. I mean, I think you're an adventurer, you're an explorer, you're on a journey. And I think a lot of artists and creators share that sentiment with you. They feel like they're here for a purpose. Closing thoughts. How can someone connect with you, Yelena, if someone's like, hey, Yelena, we want to see your work. We want to connect with you. Hey, I have a film. I'm looking for an amazing director. And or I want to, how can people find you?
Okay. Well, I think the easiest thing, and just if I had to say it without writing anything, it would be the Magic Ticket Film on Instagram is the account that I manage. So I'm very responsive to any messages. And you can find me on Instagram as well through that account. I mean, my name is a little more complicated. It's Lenushka VK, but you don't want to deal with the Russian name. And also our website for the magicticketfilm.com has been in the works. So it should be coming on live within the next couple of weeks. So, but yes, find us on Insta. The Magic Ticket Film is easy to find, and there are all the updates. And please message.
Wonderful. So executive producers, DM the Magic Ticket Film if you're looking for a director, or you want to support Yelena's The Magic Ticket Film's impact initiatives going forward. She's got a lot of great ideas, and she wants to do a lot with this film. Thank you so much again, Yelena, for being a part of our co-production with The Creative Seat and the Slow Dive podcast today. We learned so many important facets of your film journey, what you want to do with the Magic Ticket Film, and what your film future is like. And people can find you on Instagram. So any executive producers who would like to support the Magic Ticket film or any of Yelena's projects, you can drop into her DMs on the Magic Ticket film on Instagram and also visit that website going forward. Thank you so much for being a part of today's discussion, and we look forward to watching more of your films.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful chatting with you, and best of luck with your podcast. Awesome.
Thank you. I'm your host, Fariza. This is The Slow Dive. Let's make an impact one story at a time. You are-